Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, June 28th, 2000. In the fireside room this morning, we have Jan Hughes. Today's session number is 2002 and is titled Discovering Your Secret Self, Dreamwork. Let's listen in.
And some of you may be familiar with this concept. I'm going to talk more tomorrow in creativity. But have you heard of left brain and right brain? It's interesting because from a scientific, the brain viewpoint, the right brain, one scholar has suggested not calling it the unconscious side of us, but rather to call it the nonverbal side. Because the truth is, with our right brains, we perceive images, music, all of those things are stored over here. And we must, when we dream, because dreams happen in our right brain, we have to put them in words, which means they have to shift over to the left brain, which is our language center. And some is lost in the translation. Our dreams can speak to us only in images. There's many interesting things about that. We've also discovered in sleep workshops, there was a famous study done where what they did is they had two groups of people. And you know, don't you, that you dream every night. Every night, possibly three periods of active, rapid eye movement sleep, which means you're dreaming. We just don't remember it because we wake up, or when we wake up, we start thinking about other things. You know, you can have a great dream, but if you jump right out of bed and go to the shower, you're not going to remember that dream. It's gone. Even though you sleep, ooh, I had a good one. What was it? Anyway, they took these two groups of people into the sleep lab, and one group, when they went into rapid eye movement, they let them complete the cycle till it stopped, and then they woke them up. So they had a chance to complete the rapid eye movement cycle. But the second group, they woke them up the moment they started rapid eye. They didn't let them go into it. They didn't let them finish. Now, in the beginning of the first couple of days, these people were going into rapid eye at the same rate. You know, like the first group would go into rapid eye movement 3-4 times a night, so did the second one. But the second one was denied to their dreams. You see, they were woken up before they could start to dream. And by the fifth day, they were getting irritable. They were getting paranoid. Some were beginning to have hallucinations. And their brains were trying to dream up to 30 times a night. It's like the brain was saying, please let me dream. I'm gonna try again. And they kept waking the people up. And that you may have heard that before. The truth is, we know now that dreams help us maintain our sanity. If you can't dream, you're going to get unstable pretty quickly. So that's fairly interesting. These people were acting just like people who were denied sleep. You see, but they were sleeping. They weren't dreaming. They're sleeping, not dreaming. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, all of this is scientific kind of things. The interesting thing to me is, you know, we have the brain, and then we have the mind, and then we have the soul. And there's going to be many, many things that science isn't going to be able to tell us about dreams because of those more kind of things like that. So I'm going to bring you today what Carl Jung thought about dreams. Now, for those of you who weren't with me yesterday, Carl Jung was a psychologist at the same time as Freud. He was younger than Freud. And they worked together for a while. Freud thought he was going to be, you know, his heir to the kingdom there. They did split up. And one of the reasons they split up was that Freud, he had a vision that people were driven by what he called libido. You've heard these Freudian terms, I guess. That they were driven by an energy either toward, concerned with death or with sex. Now, we all know about Freud, sex, you know, that kind of thing. Jung, who was the son of a Lutheran pastor, he didn't think people were driven toward ends like that. He thought that we are driven to wholeness and completion. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that Lutheran? We're pulled by grace to wholeness. He called that individuation, that in the course of our lifetime, we work toward an integrity, if you are healthy and if you are progressing psychologically, toward an integrity in old age, a wholeness, which is a beautiful thing. Now, Jung taught that, and I have for you, for those of you who are interested, what I try to do is to give you resources to take down later. So that you can go to the library. and read more. Because what we're going to do today in this workshop is talk about our dreams and figure out what some of that might be about. But I did give you a Jungian glossary, and I have no intention of going over all of these terms today with you, but I do want to hit a couple of highlights. One is libido. These are in alphabetical order. Unlike Freud, libido means psychic energy. Libido means all of the energy available to us. And our psyche, according to Jung, is both our conscious and our unconscious. It's like for Jung, when he talks about psyche, he means our whole self, conscious and unconscious, okay? Jung said that, just like our kidneys and our liver take care of our bodies, you know, they get rid of the parts we don't need. We have, we know when we're thirsty, we know when we're tired. You know, our bodies have a self-regulating kind of way. He felt our psyche does too. And what can happen to people is that we can get one-sided. You know, you can begin to see yourself as a good and loving person, and you can totally forget that you are also capable of being greedy and being angry, and you can just kind of deny that part of you, and you just go over here and think about that, and that's very one-sided. And he said that our psyche will help regulate us, will bring us back to balance, but it perhaps in our dreams. And that is one function that for Jung dreams can point out to us. You're getting a little one-sided here. I was listening to Dan Erlander, which I'm going to make every single workshop there that I can. You know, and he was talking about what is the church not seeing about ourselves right now? You know, what is holding right now with all the work that they're doing? What are we not noticing? You know, what are we unconscious of that we're getting a little one-sided about? And in fact, it's interesting to me that Jung said that what happened in Nazi Germany was that the unconscious rose up in a whole group of Germans. And their shadow side, their inferior parts, their denied self, unconscious, rose up in a lot of people that made them able to do the Holocaust. You know, how did they justify the murder of 6 million people? This is what he's talking about. They were one-sided. They were looking only over here. And it was the eruption of the unconscious of a group of people. Isn't that interesting? So one of the things that our dreams can do for us is to help us achieve that psychic balance. There were some other things here that I feel like what we should do is just talk about dreams and then perhaps go back as things come up to some of these Jungian concepts about dream interpretation. So remember, the point I want you to make is that the psyche is self-regulating, and maybe your dreams are telling you something that you're not noticing in your waking life. You need to pay attention. I've got to show you something else. Have you ever gone to a workshop where you heard the speaker say what you believe yourself, and you thought, yes, I'm right. I'm right, yes. Well, Jung, and I wrote this on the board. I didn't get it all, so I'm going to read to you. There's a couple of words I put dot, dot, dot. Jung said, this is in 1960 in one of his writings, "So difficult is it to understand a dream that for a long time I have made it a rule, when someone tells me a dream and asks for my opinion, to say first of all to myself, I have no idea what this dream means. After that," he said, "I can begin to examine the dream." And I thought, yes, yes. The only difference is I don't say it to myself. You know, Jung, he was an introvert, and so he just thought it. But I'm going to tell you that I do this. As a therapist, when my clients bring me dreams, I'll say, I have no idea what this dream means, but you and I can work on it together. Because the truth is, a dream is something that your mind, a little play that you have written for yourself, that is coming to you from your unconscious side. And the dream, every dream, is more about the dreamer than it is about anything else. Now, in the Bible, we saw great dreams, you know, about famine with Joseph. I mean, there's great dreams in the Bible. But our dreams are probably going to be more about us than about anything else there is. So what we're going to do today is, like Rabbi Marks, we're going to talk about dreams, and I want you all to brainstorm with me as dreams come up. What could this dream possibly mean? You know, what does this symbol mean? It's really quite fun. Have you been in Rabbi Marx's? We're going to do midrash on dreams. There was a pastor, I'm so sorry she's not here, but she was in my workshop yesterday. She had to leave today. She said that she spent 2 years with a union analyst analyzing her dreams. And she was so sorry, she's going to buy the tape. And I said, oh, my dear, if you spent 2 years with a union analyst, there's nothing in this workshop. And she said, oh, no, no, that's just what she said. She said, I have no idea what this dream means. And it was quite a wonderful conversation about that. I enjoyed her very much, and I'm sorry she's not here. So, having said that, I want you to look at one of your handouts. Let's just kind of go over it, and it's the one on working with dreams. How many of you have recorded your dreams before? Look at that. That's about 4 of the group. That's pretty good. Some people have said to me, I don't dream. Because I'll say to clients, what are your dreams telling you? And they'll say, oh, I don't dream. That's not true. We all dream. The problem is, if you complete that REM and don't wake up, it's gone. The beautiful thing is here at Holden, I'm not using an alarm clock. And if you wake up naturally, which how many of us down late get to wake up naturally? Very difficult. But when you wake up naturally, one of the writers, Anne Faraday, says you are waking up from a dream. When you wake naturally, you're waking from a dream. So just lie there a minute. Lie there a minute and think about that. And that's been a very interesting insight for me. We have to prepare a little bit. If you want to remember your dreams, put a paper or pen at your bedside and have it ready there. You know, it's so funny. When I was preparing these workshops for Holden, I was all ready. I had my paper and pen. It was like, okay, God, give me some dreams. And none came. And I wonder if it was that I was thinking so much about the unconscious for these 4 workshops that I hadn't left just a whole lot, for my dreams to, have to bring them in or something. But it was very frustrating. I had a couple, and none of them worth telling. And my second point here is before you settle in for sleep, ask the dreams to come. And I just make it a part of my nighttime prayer. Just like, Lord, if there's something I need to know, send me a dream and wake me up. Let me know. One important thing I want you to know, though, is don't worry too much. If there is something your unconscious needs you to know and you didn't write down the dream, it'll come again. And it'll come again, and it'll come again, maybe in a different form. Some people have recurring dreams. If you have a recurring dream, pay a lot of attention to that. But sometimes it's just the image keeps coming. Or like my lawn furniture. I was telling the group, I've been dreaming every morning, of course. And there's been lawn furniture, lightweight, movable, foldable up furniture in all my dreams. And I think my unconscious is saying, don't get too happy here, Jen. This is Holden, and you've got to go down lake. It's not nice, substantial furniture I can sink into. That kind of thing. If you have a recurring, there's something there, something to be said. So don't worry. If it's something really important, it'll come again. Okay, so before you settle in for sleep, ask for a dream to come. Upon natural awakening, lie still with your eyes closed and recall that dream. I put under natural awakening to help you remember that if you wake naturally, you're probably dreaming. But the truth is, even if the alarm goes off, lie still with your eyes closed and just see, just check it out. You can take a second or two to do that. Because you may be dreaming even when the alarm goes off, When you record your dreams, and when you're married, sometimes you sneak off to the bathroom or have a flashlight, or you don't want to wake up the other person. But when you record at night or in the early morning, you're just trying to get it down as quick as you can, write down anything someone says first. You can go back then and say, I was going down the road, or whatever was happening. Because what someone says is going to be the first thing that goes. You'll remember it, and they said something to me, but I don't know what, Colors, if there's colors or anything like that, try to get that down in your first couple lines upon awakening, because those will slip away. Make whatever notes you can in the night, which is difficult if your spouse, says, what are you doing, or something like that. Do you have trouble with that? Have those of you who have recorded your dreams, have you disturbed your...
I did it for a while, and then I hardly got any sleep, because I dream a lot, and then you get awake you know, you wake up and you write down your dreams, and then
you turn and confront, and you do something with that dream. You know, if they dreamed that somebody, they'd gotten a chicken from a neighbor, then they took a chicken to that neighbor the next day. There was some, it was the work of the day was to do something with your dream. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine in such a culture what good dream lore they had. There's no doubt about it. Patricia Garfield's a good resource on all of that also. And there's many books I've seen in the library on the Senoids, S-E-N-O-I, the Senoid Dreamers. And to me, it doesn't matter at all whether that early anthropologist got it right or not, because it works. Mm-hmm. It works. Nightmares that people may have, a recurrent nightmare, turn and confront what it is.
That's part of treatment for PTSD, basically, too.
It is. Post-traumatic stress syndrome, to go ahead and confront the, whatever it is that you're afraid of. Okay, these, anything else? Good comments. I knew it'd be great, because everybody has dreams.
Well, just a question, and maybe you're going to cover this, but
uh-huh.
Say we have a recurrent theme in our dreams, and I have one. Do we treat that as an inner reality that this is helping us become aware of, or do we treat it as something that's bothering us that we should change? What kind of how? Kind of which direction do we look at that?
Jeez, I don't know. But I'll share with you that I had such an experience, and in fact, if it falls out of here, I have a little paper bookmark that's an alligator. It's not falling. Oh, there it is. I dreamed for 2 years about alligators, and I have a bookmark that I keep in my journal. I kept dreaming about these alligators for 2 years. I mean, alligators just were popping up in my dreams. Could not figure it out. I was at the end of a bad marriage and going through a returning to the church, you know, a very time of spiritual change, and there's these alligators, you know. Couldn't figure it out. So I started thinking, what do alligators mean to me? You have to say, what does this mean to me? And look for in your life. Here's a piece. My first dream I can remember in my whole life was of alligators. You know, and you might pay attention to what is the earliest dream when you were the littlest child that you can remember being. Could you remember? My first dream of alligators, we have a children's museum in Fort Worth. And at that time, I mean, we're talking a long time ago, you know, 40 years, there was a part of it that had alligators. And in my dream, I was a child, there was a square hole in the floor of this museum, marble floor. And I yelled to my mother, "Come, mother." And she ran toward me and fell in the hole. And I looked down and the alligators ate her. That was my first dream. Now, we're not going to analyze this, are we, Dr. Warren? Anyway, there's my first alligator dream. But now, you know, I'm in my late 30s, you know, 40 years old, and I'm dreaming of alligators. I worked for Child Protective Services. I worked in foster care, licensing foster parents. And we had a joke in our unit when the licensing readers came that the alligators were going to get us. You know, we had these cartoons all around. The alligators are going to bite us on the buns. You know what I mean? So there was a lot about alligators in that unit. It was kind of a joke in that unit. So what does all this mean? Finally, as I continued to write down my dreams, I noticed that the alligators in my dreams had no teeth. They were toothless alligators. So what does this mean? I think it means that I am being anxious and worried about a lot of things that are not true dangers. I'm afraid of the alligators, and the alligators aren't going to hurt me. And I know it was the right answer, because the minute I got there, the alligators stopped. You know, if you have interpreted, the right interpretation of a dream is one that satisfies you, and the dream stops. Because it says, yes, you got it. That's all you need to know about this now. So I'll offer you that I can, you know, you're going to have to think in your life, what does this theme mean? It may, you know, be a theme throughout your whole life. Like rejection, you know, what does this mean to me? And what do I need to do about it? Now, I have to confess to you, I'm still working on my anxiety, but I'm doing much, much better. 12-step practice, which we'll talk about Friday, has helped me a lot with that. But anyway, have you had recurring symbols like that? Couldn't figure out?
For years and years and years, and I talked to dream and talked to ice cream now.
You still have some you don't know what it means?
Same images over and over for many years. And once somebody called and gave it up to him, and Greenberg, I talked to him about it, and it didn't seem right, and yeah, I've taken more workshops. I can figure it out.
Maybe it'll come someday. Maybe it's not time. I'm going to go check out those dream work tapes. I looked them up, but I haven't had time to read them yet. Because the more you talk to other people and share your dream, you just never know when the answer may come. Anything else?
So if you've dreamed something for basically a theme for about 20 years, which I have, it means I still need to work on it.
There was something there. I don't know.
Mine is I'm always on a journey. Uh-huh. I'm traveling. I'm going into faraway places, and I'm taking packs and suitcases with me. I'm journeying.
But let me ask you, is that not your life?
But that's what I do a lot.
Well, then there is.
is that a simple answer?
And one thing I love, you know, to remember is let's not be too serious about this either. Yeah. It's like you can get one-sided and, this dream. And in fact, Paul had a dream, and I have a release to speak of this. He had a dream a couple of weeks ago. We were preparing for Holden, but there was a bull in a pen in our backyard that had gotten out. And now this big bull, there's a lot of big bulls in Texas. This big bull is now circling our house, and it's so big it could, you know, break down the walls. And I'm saying, go out there and pin that bull back up, Paul. And to tell you the truth, I worried about that dream. Because remember I told you about my anxiety issue. I'm thinking, what does this bull mean? What is out there? And, you know, it might just mean that Paul, you know, like I'm telling him to handle too. I don't even know what it meant. But I'm just telling you, it was stupid of me to worry about that dream. You know, have fun with them. Really, it can become hard work, and you lose sleep if you go too deep.
I saw one thing I think about you, like, what's the feeling behind that dream? What is it? Is it
good question.
Is it wonderful, or, you know, it is just a great
thing? It's not frustrating. It's sort of, I'm in the spirit of exploration. I'm searching for something.
Okay. Sounds like life.
That's beautiful. Yeah, it's a journey of life.
What I can say is, here's this dream again. In my dream, I say that. Here's the same thing again. I went over this so many times.
It's impossible that the dream is just saying to you, you are not in control and you can't figure everything out, right? That's what the dream is trying to correct, you know, if you're used to figuring things out.
I have found that if I analyze what might have occurred the day before that precipitates the dream, that if it's an awful dream and sort of recurrent, some of them, about bugs or unpleasant things or plane crashes or anything, that if I tell myself before I go to sleep, that after a very unpleasant experience of any kind, that I'm not going to dream about that, I will not dream about it.
Isn't that good? I can
preempt those dreams.
I believe in prayer. It's like, Lord, you know, let me sleep tonight. You know, whatever we need to say, let's have that last moment with our higher power as we go down. This handout, the second half of it, it's going to touch on exactly what you're talking about. This comes, and I highly recommend this book, Naomi Quink and her husband, Alan Quink. Naomi Quink was the writer of the book I used yesterday, Beside Ourselves. She's wonderful, writes wonderful things with psychological type, both Jungians. Alan Quink is a Jungian analyst and a psychologist at New Mexico State University. And their book, and I put it down here so you could remember, is called Dream Thinking. And what I appreciate about the Quinks that I found very useful and wanted to bring to you is these four questions as you're thinking about your dream. And the first question is this an objective dream or is it a subjective dream? You know, are the people in it people that are familiar to us? Is it our family? You know, is it people we know? Or are these the people, there are people in it, but we don't recognize them? The Quinks tell us that if it's people that are faceless, they're people, but we don't know them, it's about us. But if it's about our son, our daughter, our wife, it may be something about our objective life day to day. It might be something happened yesterday, more likely is. That dreams that are more about us and our personality are going to be those people we don't know. Does that make sense to you? I'm trying to think of what examples of this are. A woman dreamed that she fell from her porch
And I've thought about this at Holden with so many wonderful porches. She fell from her porch, and so she went the next day and looked at the rail, and it needed work. You know, there's some, we go about our world with our 10% conscious, and we notice things, but our conscious didn't encode it, you know? And so in our dreams, things may come up that it would be wise for us to go and check. So it's a nice rule of thumb. You know, if you dream something, go just look. Just look around. Maybe your car, you know, needs repair if it breaks down.
Say more about the objective and subjective. I often have dreams, and she's always saying, kid me, that there's always often a small group, a large group of people. And many times, they're new faces to me. So that would be objective or subjective?
They're new faces to you?
Yeah, I don't know the people.
According to Queens, you know. I'm not lifting this as the truth. It would be subjective. It's about you. It's something about the people. In fact, I'll tell you, the Gestalt therapist that came out of Fritz Perl's work, they work with dreams. This can be fun. By saying everything in the dream is you, is a part of you. So like be the chair, you know, be the people in the crowd, you know, and look at your dream from all the perspectives of all the parts and be the car on the journey, you know, be the suitcase. You know, that's what a Gestalt dream analysis would do. But anyway, that's what the Queens say. They say the one difference is, in terms of people you know versus people you don't know, is it could be the Queen of England. Now, you don't know the Queen of England, but she might be representing something, because we kind of do know people in the media. You know, if you dream about somebody in the media, it might be an objective dream, because we kind of do know something about them, so they're more familiar than not. That's the only exception they offer there. Anything else about objective or subjective? Their next question is, do you have to go, Paul?
I'm sorry.
Paul is going to sing with the children at Narnia. So, he's got to go. See you later. compensatory or confirmatory? Now, in this dream, is it showing us something that we are getting one-sided on? That would be compensatory. Or is it confirming something that we know? You know, Paul's bull, you know, the bull that was circling the house? He's a gentle soul. He's an INFP, who all knows Myers-Briggs. And that bull might have been saying, you know, Paul, you need to be more forceful. You need to go deal with, you know, it might be. I'm not saying that's true. But that might have been a compensatory kind of dream. Confirmatory dreams may be resolving ambiguity. You know, you have a decision. You have a decision and you really don't know, and you're thinking, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. A dream may come that gives you more clarity on that. I don't know if this is going to make sense, but this is a dream I had. At the time I was returning to the church, I was burned in the Baptist church as a teenager from 12 to 18. I got kicked out of Baptist church at the beginning of the fundamentalist wars, and I was just 18. And my family was no support in terms of religion. So I went where I thought, if that's the kind of God that everybody's going to burn in, I asked, are Jews and Hindus going to burn in hell? And basically the pastor said, yes, they are. And it was like, well, that's not a God. This is the scariest thing I ever heard in my entire life. Anyway, I came back to the church in my first marriage. I married a Lutheran. But it was a very difficult time for me. And I had this dream. I met my Jungian interest. I met a woman named Charlotte. She was my mentor in Jungian work. And I had this dream that Charlotte and I were in a bathroom. Bathroom is often purification. We wash there. We get rid of the bathroom purification. I'm looking in the mirror, and Charlotte's there. And all of a sudden, my clothes turn to glowing, beautiful white. More beautiful, you know, translucent. What does that remind y'all of? All of a sudden, clothing turns gold.
Transfiguration.
No doubt about it. It was like a transfigure. It was me, or transfigured. But my hair was like this bright red, strange red color. And you know what my friend Charlotte said to me? She said, in the dream, she said, you need a little loving care. Now, you women, you know loving care is a brand of hair dye, right? You need a little loving care. And fix that hair, you know, from... But in the dream, transfiguration, you need a little... What I thought when I worked with that dream was I needed to take a little bit of care of myself. It was, you know, I was a new Christian, if you will, returning to the wonderful ELCA that saved my life. There's just no doubt about it. And anyway, I think that was a dream that confirmed
confirm, this is right, go here, it's okay. But take yourself. You ever had a pun dream like that? Dreams are so fun. Compensatory or confirmatory? I'll tell you, just heard this dream here at Holden. A woman of color was going to present the next day. She was kind of worried about it. She thought to herself, will there be any women of color there when I present? Will there be any people of color to be there with me? And she dreamed the night before that there was a glorious crowd showed up. All these different people of all these different races. And there was great joy. And she carried that dream with her the next day, and everything was fine. This is an example of confirmatory and compensatory dreams. Do you see? Does that make sense? Wonderful things. And I've got to watch the time. Boy, I tell you. You help me. Somebody say 5 minutes when we get to 5 minutes. Will you do that for me? Okay. Any comments? No? Transitory or enduring? Is this dream about something in my life right now? Or is this dream about something long-standing? You know, my alligator dream was about anxiety that I had carried my whole life. And I don't know about your journey. You know, it's kind of hard because of the work you do. You travel. It could be, you know, life now. Or it could be an enduring dream. And I can see that of an attitude toward life of exploration and what might come up. And life is a journey. I mean, maybe we don't need to decide whether it's now or forever. If it's pleasing to you and it's not a frightening thing or something like that. Let's see, I had an example of that. Oh, I already told my alligator dream. That was one of my enduring dreams. And I recently left. I was the clinical director for the Children and Adolescents Division of our state, or local, state MHMR back at home. And it was very difficult because managed care, things are not going well in Texas. I'm telling everyone at dinner, look out. It's not pretty in Texas, and I don't think that's been said enough. But when I left, there was going to be a party, you know, goodbye, Jan, and all that. I had a dream that there was a swimming pool. There was a big swimming pool, and the children were jumping in it. And I'm saying, get the children out of there. And I looked down, and I saved one child, but then the pool was dark, and I couldn't see the children. This is how I felt in my last days working there, that the children, the poor children, were not going to be served. We were going to have to cut back on the number of serving. You see, that is a dream about what was happening then. That wasn't a dream about, it was a dream about my state of mind. My sense of this is not good, this is overwhelmed, the poor children are going to drown. You see, but that was a transitory kind of dream. Do you have any examples? Anything? When you're leaving a job, you know, those kind of times? I don't want to forget your...
it's really hard. I could entertain the whole place.
It's an enduring dream because you've had it for many years about rejection. And then let's see. Oh, this last question is very interesting. Proactive or reactive? In your dream, when you were looking at it, were you taking an active part? Was there something you could do about whatever was going on? Or was it kind of happening and you're a witness? Can you think of a dream that you've had? Or you know, were you, and was there anything you could do? In my dream with the children drowning in the pool, I was a witness in panic. It was like, come help, somebody help. There was nothing I could do, which was a very scary thing to me. So that's the kind of, if in your dream, what do you think about this? I'm just offering this. If there's something you can do and you're not doing it, maybe the dream is saying, do that. You know what? That's an interesting way to look at a dream. What are you thinking?
I'm
processing it?
Yeah, processing and trying to think of some fairly recent dreams and how it might fit.
And in your journey, dreams, you are active, it sounds like, or?
Yeah,
mostly active.
Yeah.
That's an interesting concept. And then, these are like four ways to enter analyzing your dream, and then they say, look at the symbols and look at the things.
Look at what?
Symbols. Is there any recurring symbols? Long picture. I don't think that's significant. Maybe it'll turn out to be very good. I don't know. Or look at the themes. That, like you said, that the story, the rejection story, comes in different plots.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
It's not the same dream every time, but it's
coming to people after loved ones have died and they return, and I know they're dead and I know this is a dream, but they always turn their backs on me. I have so much I want to say to them.
Oh, that's so very interesting. Thank you for saying that. There is a new book out called Dream Messengers. And gosh, I'm forgetting who wrote it right now. But it is about dreaming of your dead loved one. Mm-hmm. That often when someone in our families has died, we will dream of that person.
Always.
And it's very interesting. The book is about the healing work that can be done. You know, like you know, what happened? Where did you go? In fact, if any of y'all read Buchner's, forget his first name, Telling Secrets?
Frederick.
Oh, is he the finest writer that ever lived? In his Telling Secrets, in his therapy, he engaged his father. Yeah, his father had committed suicide. While the boys were in the house, he went down and hooked up the car, and he engaged his father of finishing the conversation or finding out or saying something you wish you had been able to say. Let's see. I wanted to tell you one dream that I have permission from my son to tell. That's another example. When he was 8 years old, you know, I thought this child was such a fairy. I thought he was just perfect. I had a dream, and I told him, we're going on a trip, so go to the bathroom. You know how you do kids. You know, we're going on a trip, go to the bathroom before we go. And he went in the bathroom, and he did not go in the toilet. He filled up with urine the trash can. And then he kicked it over. So when I woke up the next day, I realized that my little son is often one that would say, yes, Mom, and not do something I was totally missing in conscious life. You know, he was a good boy. So that's an example of what a dream might show you. Now, he said he doesn't care if I tell it. He tells people, too. So it's a terrible thing to be a therapist's job.
How do you feel about the universality of symbols?
Thank you for bringing that up. A very important part of Jung's theory is that we have a personal unconscious, you know, which holds our own personal experiences, you know, our culture. But Jung thought we are connected by what he called the collective unconscious. And he came to this because every culture of human beings have certain images that he called archetypes, which is on your list. Archetype, the father, the mother, the king. And one of the, thank you for bringing that up, the archetype of the shadow is very important. If you can imagine yourself standing in the sun, we cast behind us a shadow. The Jungians say those are the parts of ourselves that are denied and repressed, or maybe just undeveloped. You know, in Myers-Briggs parlance, they're the letters that don't show. They're the parts we didn't prefer and develop really well. And they're the denied parts of us. And the shadow comes in dreams. It's always a person of the same sex as the dreamer, is the understanding of that. Always the same sex. Might be dirty. A fine church woman, you know, never did anything wrong in her life, might dream of a prostitute. That might be her shadow side. You know how we were talking about the one side of us? You know, the other side of you may come to you in a dream, and it will be the same sex as you.
So why is it always the same gender? It sounds good, but it just sounds a bit too dogmatic.
I don't know. I'm telling you what Jung said. I agree with you. You know, there should be a midrash around this, too.
Sure. What about race memory? Do you use that term, race memory?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, when I read about Jung, that was stuck in my mind more.
Race memory. He did a lot of work around primitive tribes are not differentiated.
Somehow,
they live fairly unconsciously.
Somehow from, I guess, from spiritual evolution, it comes memories of, he didn't say lives we have lived, but how our physical body has changed because of our ancestors.
I have no doubt. The interesting thing about reading Jung is he's not very orderly in his marvelous rich thought. It's just kind of all over everywhere and you have to pull it out. So I must say that race memory, nothing's coming up for me. Yeah. But in the collective unconscious, we all tribes, all people, all cultures have a demon. You know, the Satan kind of thing. You'll see that in Japan, in everywhere. And he was very fascinated about this kind of thing.
and felt that there was some way in which we are all connected.
Yeah.
You know, some people talk about transpersonal dreams, where an interesting thing in hypnosis, by the way, for any of you who have ever been hypnotized in a group, often the same image will come up for the people in the group. Is that not interesting? When we are very deeply relaxed and in trance, often, you know, some shape, it's not very, very clear, but as if we dream. And Paul and I often notice that we are dreaming about similar things.
I'm gonna ask you.
When we wake in the morning, because we are connected. We are a connected people, a tribal people. I think that's one of our sicknesses in our culture, is we've lost our tribalness, really. Thank you for lifting that. And that's why I give you the glossary. There are many, one other thing I want to mention is, did you hear Rabbi Marks today?
No.
Ah, that was the most beautiful Bible study. In the end, he was talking about Moses' death. And there was this wonderful piece of this midrash where one rabbi said that the soul came out of Moses, a female, my daughter. A female soul came out of Moses and said, oh, please, you know, don't make me leave this wonderful. And then God kissed Moses and pulled the soul away. When I read that, Jung says that within every man, there is a woman called the anima, a female image, the perfect woman, the ideal mother, lover, daughter, sister, whatever, and she may come in your dreams. You know, when you dream about a woman, it may be your anima. And in fact, there's some thought that when we fall in love, what we really do is project. We meet a man. You know, we women, we have the animas. We have a man's image inside us. When we fall in love with a man, we are projecting our animus onto him, and essentially, in a funny kind of way, falling in love with ourselves. Is that kind of funny? It's like, this man is the man that I would be if I were a man. I love him. You know, it's very, very interesting. And there's some truth in that. So the anima and the animus are on your list. And if you dream about a man, a strange man you don't know, it could be your male part. Your male part, maybe, in that dream in some kind of way. Because we all have it all. We just prefer one over the other.
Say a little more about transpersonal dreams.
Oh, I'm not going to say a whole lot about that because I do not consider myself an expert in that. But there's a whole body of literature on that kind of thing about archetypal dreams. Let me tell you, let me see if I can resurrect this because I didn't prepare this for presentation. James Hall, wonderful Jungian analyst, had a dream that he dreamed that there was metal in his knee. There was metal sticking in his knee like rods, and he couldn't figure it out. First thought, I have cancer. I'm sick. He checked that out, went to the doctor, and indeed recommends that if you have a dream, go ahead and check it out. You know, your body may be telling you something that is true. Don't freak out, but check it out. But anyway, that went mad. And then he heard about a culture that had a tradition that with the knee, there was a thing that was way back there. And I don't think this is where I should have prepared it for presentation, but the knee and the metal was a thing that was in this of God, an image. He had no way to ever know that. He just kept sharing that dream with people. Now, the Jungians call that amplification. When we go to fairy tales, the witch, you know, that kind of thing. When we go to the myths of other cultures, we're going to amplification. And that is the idea of the collective unconscious and the transpersonal dream. I have not felt in my spiritual walk that I need to go that deep, you know. And in fact, Anne Faraday says, don't go, you know, start first. Is this something about my daily life? And then is this something about me? And then go down to, is this something archetypal and cultural among all peoples? Because, you know, it'll be something like that. How about you had the comment you wanted to make?
Well, I have a question. Is there a good dictionary of symbolism too? I know the classic one, but that doesn't help me at all. I don't like that.
I see a lot of dictionaries about dreams, and the problem is a lot of people go there and think, I'm going to look up what that dream means. Well, that symbol may not mean that to you in your life, so I would say that any dictionary of symbols and images and any source that you can go to would be fine. But just know that that image, you know, that is not maybe not your image. So if you don't find satisfaction, you haven't found the right answer yet at all. The last moment, and I know we're about to end, even though nobody told me 5 minutes.
Sorry.
So the tape is, bye-bye. Have you ever had a dream that you felt God sent to you for a purpose?
A big dream, yeah. A big, and you know the moment you woke up that that's a big dream, an image, a source of comfort to. I just wanted to lift that I do believe that happens to us. And if we pay attention to our dreams and welcome them and enjoy them, God can speak to us in that way. And I'm over time. Thank you all so much.
Well, thank you.
Creating an awesome round of applause. Thank you. Look at it. We're applauding us.
Thank you so much.
Oh, very good.